This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, May 4th. I'm Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on the magazine today, community members gathered in the cold rain last night to call for the closure of a for-profit immigration detention center in Aurora. The facility is currently the site of a large COVID outbreak among those held there. We'll hear from former detainees and their relatives. Then an update from H2O Radio and This Week in Water. On today's show, wild donkeys and horses in the desert dig wells for themselves and other animals. At the bottom of the hour, we'll play our weekly comment line, comments from listeners who share their thoughts about what they hear on KGNU. At 8:30, the How on Earth annual graduation special. The guests are three graduate students who recently gave or will soon give their PhD thesis defenses. They will share details on the research they did for their dissertations and what they plan to do next. At 9 a.m., it's The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts, the British philosopher and writer and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative, 2.5 hours of eclectic music until noon. But first, it's time for local and regional headlines. Today's forecast calls for more rain and snow, and if it seems excessive, Denver International Airport reported Monday that the total precipitation since January 1st is nearly 8 inches, making this the wettest 4 months since 1944. The moisture also has put a dent in the drought conditions over the northeast quarter of Colorado. We'll have the forecast coming up after headlines. As of yesterday, almost 2 million Coloradans have been fully immunized against COVID-19, with 2.6 million Coloradans already having received their first dose. But new polling continues to show a political divide in the state over who wants to get them. The poll by Keating Research, On-Site Public Affairs, and KOM Colorado Poll found that 63% of people surveyed had already received at least one vaccine dose. Another 10% who said they planned on getting vaccinated but had not yet, 12% who said they were not sure if they would get vaccinated, and 15% who said they don't plan to get vaccinated. The poll also found 80% of Democrats said they had already received one dose, compared to 61% of unaffiliated voters and 46% of Republican respondents. Meanwhile, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration is expected to authorize the COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer for youngsters ages 12 to 15 by next week. That would make shots available for many before the beginning of the next school year. An official with the FDA said Monday that Pfizer has found that its shot, already authorized for those 16 and older, also provides protection for the younger group. The need for mental and behavioral health increased substantially during the coronavirus pandemic, according to a new Government Accountability Office report. Eric Galatis with Public News Service has this report.
Suicide rates, overdoses, and substance abuse are all on the rise since the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, according to a new Government Accountability Office report. Colorado's community health centers have seen a dramatic increase in patients in need of care. Jonathan Muther with Salud Family Health Centers, which operates 13 clinics serving both rural and metropolitan residents, says before COVID, nearly 1 in 5 presented symptoms of mental illness or substance use disorder. Since the pandemic, 1 in 3 present symptoms, but most cannot access care.
Even before the pandemic, more than half of the individuals with an identified need did not receive access to care, and that gap has only widened since the pandemic.
Last week, Muther told members of the U.S. Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions that his team has responded to the increased need in part by expanding telehealth efforts. But he says more needs to be done to remove barriers that prevent people from getting care, including lack of adequate health coverage, not knowing where to get help, social stigma, and a lack of non-English speaking staff. I'm Eric Galatis.
Following a weekend hearing and another scheduled for this afternoon, environmental advocates and neighbors of the Suncor oil refinery are making the case why its permit renewal should be denied by the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission. Suncor, located on the south edge of Commerce City in Adams County, has a history of releasing dangerous pollutants, and one Adams County commissioner says it's time to end a repeating cycle. Steve Miller has more.
Many speakers reminded the AQCC of Suncor's history of releasing dangerous pollutants, which periodically have coated surrounding neighborhoods in ash-like material. Suncor angered residents by offering car wash coupons to the neighborhood affected by the chemical coating. The pollutants also disproportionately impacts low-income households and communities of color, primarily in the 80216 zip code, which is frequently reported as the most polluted zip code in the United States. The Colorado Sun reports the environmental advocates have pointed out to the state's Air Pollution Control Division that passage of HB 1261 in 2019 forces state officials to take more health factors into account before giving permits. A recent study by the Colorado Fiscal Institute found that by closing the Suncor refinery, Adams County would receive over $12.7 million annually due to reduced levels of adverse health impacts. Phil Doe of Be the Change said that Suncor has been operating for over a decade without a valid permit. He added that Cultivado, a Colorado Latinx nonprofit organization, has received funds from the state to conduct continuous monitoring of pollutants from the plant. Doe feels that no permits should be considered for renewal until after Cultivado's one-year study is completed. Suncor said it takes its responsibility seriously, and they have spent hundreds of millions of dollars in recent years to improve Suncor's pollution record. After tonight's meeting, the AQCC will accept written public comments for another week. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A Denver-based online news outlet is set to buy 24 community newspapers with the goal of preserving local journalism. The Colorado Sun, created 3 years ago by journalists who left the Denver Post, has partnered with the nonprofit National Trust for Local News to purchase the family-owned Colorado Community Media, which operates the 24 local newspapers. The arrangement adds to a growing number of newspapers collaborating with nonprofits devoted to protecting journalism in the United States, where private equity or hedge funds have increasingly purchased and then consolidated financially struggling legacy newspapers, creating news deserts across the country. A bill that would prohibit insurance companies from using third-party consumer information to charge higher insurance premiums passed out of a committee at the Denver Capitol on Monday. It's designed to prevent insurance companies from using information based on race, national or ethnic origin, religion, gender, sexual orientation, or disability to set insurance rates. Also yesterday, a bipartisan bill was passed to remove a provision in a state law that prohibits localities from requiring affordable housing opportunities in developing projects. Sponsors say it reverses a decades-old court ruling known to housing advocates as the Telluride decision, and say it will increase local economic development opportunities, provide housing options for Colorado's workforce, and help mitigate Colorado's worsening housing crisis. Weather along the Front Range today: scattered showers and thunderstorms are predicted to continue, with a high temperature of around 57, low of 41. The sun is expected to return tomorrow with a high of 60 and 74 degrees by Thursday. Right now, outside our Boulder studios, it's 38 degrees. Immigrants' rights activists, forcibly separated families, and their allies gathered outside of the for-profit Immigration Detention Center run by the GEO Group in Aurora last night, calling for its closure and for the humanitarian parole of those detained within. The facility is the site of an active COVID outbreak affecting around 100 detainees, according to recent data released by immigration authorities to Colorado Congressman Jason Crow. Last night's vigil included people formerly detained at the Aurora facility and their family members. Here's a sample of their testimony, starting with Christina Saldivar.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thank you for being here tonight through the weather. I know usually the mailmen only go through rain, sleet, and snow, but we're fighters, so we're here today, and I appreciate you guys for being here. So we're all here because we would like to get this concentration camp closed down. That's what I refer this place to, as I know firsthand that my husband was starved and neglected for, was medically neglected for 4 days. and he was not given proper medical attention or meals for the 2 months he was in here. So as a forced single mother, at the hands of my government, of 5 children, U.S. born citizens, I as well being a U.S. born citizen, my husband has been removed now for 16 months almost. They need to free them all, and not free them all across the border, because most of them have lived their lives here. They've made a new family here. They made a new life. George was deported January of last year, and he had no clue of what was going on in his own country. He forgot their ways. He forgot the language. And it was just a totally different experience for him when he returned home. We're also here as well to get these doors closed, because we all know that they are for profit and they are discriminatory. It's a prison. It's not a detention facility. Why are they being detained if most of them are not criminals? All of us are entitled to make mistakes in our lives, but our immigrant community are held to higher stakes than we are as citizens, and I don't think that's okay.
Buenas tardes a todos. Mi nombre es Lupe López.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Lupe López.
Les doy las gracias por estar apoyándonos en esta otra vigilia más. Sé que después de la pandemia no habíamos podido venir.
I want to thank you all for being here. This is the first time we have all been together at a vigil outside since COVID. And I'm here as someone who knows what it is like to be in there. I was inside for 4 days, and it is a terrible thing to happen.
Como madre, les puedo asegurar que es un gran dolor, porque yo lo viví también.
And I personally know how difficult it is to be inside and not have contact with your children. I was there in 2012.
Es por eso es que estamos recordando que es la importancia de estar aquí para poder cerrar algún día este centro de detención, y yo sé que hay muchos más.
And so we are here today because we believe this and all centers should be closed. And we are here because we know that we will achieve that one of these days, and that we must fight to close them so that no mother is separated from her children or any parents from their children.
Hasta que todos estos centros de detenciones cierren, porque no es justo que las familias estén ahí separadas.
Hi, everybody. So my name is Raul Medina. I was released from the detention center behind us 10 months ago. I did 11 months and 3 weeks in there. And right now I am working alongside Colorado People's Alliance as a community organizer to try to shut this facility down. And we're gonna do it. We're gonna get it, and we're gonna do it. I am here today to kind of inform you guys about a detention lifeline that we have going, where current detainees can call this line and kind of let us know if they need anything or what we could help them with, but also to let us know if there's any injustices happening inside. Like we've seen, we've been able to get a lot of really useful information, and only with that type of information is how we're going to be able to shut this place down. We have a geo report right now where we have over 87 testimonies from people, from rotten food, frozen food, to physical or mental abuse, just anything you can imagine, right? So we have over 100 COVID cases here in the last week. I was in there for 11 months and 3 weeks, and in those 11 months, we had an outbreak of measles, scabies, mumps, and COVID. People have been in there for 2 to 3 years. What have they not seen? This is why we need to continue to join, come together, and stay as community so we can continue fighting for these people. Sí se puede, sí!
My name is Alejandra Portillos. My family has been impacted by these really just messed up, arbitrary immigration policies and practices that the U.S. and other Latin American countries carry out. I'm a member of COPA, and I'm also a graduate student at CU Boulder in the Ethnic Studies Department. And so I'm here to speak about Tri-County agreeing to go into the GEO facility and do what they call an accurate report. We want accountability. We want it to be documented that what's going on to our community members and to individuals from all over, what's happening within these facilities.
I want to say just one last thing and why this is so important. CDPHE, el Departamento de Salud, CDPHE had given us their word that they were going to do an unannounced audit, right? And From the phone calls that we get in, the people who are currently detained let us know that 3 days before CDPHE was supposed to do their audit, their surprise audit, they were having them prepared because they knew they were coming, right? The report that they gave out was everything is fine and dandy, pretty much. Everything looks good. Nothing's wrong with this place. Everybody's healthy and everything's perfect. Mm-hmm. You can't come to us and tell us that there's 100 people in here with COVID in a week and there's nothing wrong. We won't allow that. And that's why, as community, we need to make these phone calls. We need to pressure these people and say, we're looking at you. Necesitamos ponerles presión y decirles, estamos mirando. Muchas gracias. Thank you.
Those were some of the voices from a vigil held last night in front of a for-profit immigration detention center in Aurora, operated by the GEO Group. The facility is the site of an active COVID outbreak. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU.
Wild horses survive in the desert by digging wells. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
As many as 25,000 barrels suspected of containing chemical waste, including the banned pesticide DDT, were discovered off the Southern California coast near Los Angeles.
Researchers from the Scripps Institution of Oceanography used underwater drones with sonar to capture images of barrels 3,000 feet below the surface that cover an area twice the size of Manhattan.
The expedition was the first of its kind to expose what has long been suspected, that the basin has been a massive toxic waste site dating back to World War II, as various industries treated the ocean as a cheap alternative to landfills.
The research team doesn't know how many of the barrels contain DDT, but high levels of the pesticide have been detected in marine mammals and also in ocean sediments between the Los Angeles coast and Catalina Island to the west.
An expert not involved in the expedition told The Guardian that removing the barrels or containing them with cement structures would be astronomically expensive and perhaps not even feasible.
Mitigation of future harm may be among the few options available, such as limiting commercial activity in the area, which could disturb the site and potentially break open the barrels.
All over the earth, herds of wild horses and donkeys roam deserts, and they do something that is beneficial not just for themselves, but for many other animals. They dig wells to get water.
A new study from the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia, describes how these feral animals, long considered to be a threat to the natural environment, dramatically increase water availability, particularly during the heat of summer.
In North America, wells dug by the animals, which the study calls ass holes, provided almost 60 other species with water, including numerous birds, mule deer, mountain lions, and even black bears.
The donkeys and horses can dig wells up to 6 feet deep, and once the holes dry up, some become wetlands where trees can become established. Corn is the top agricultural crop in the U.S., but after harvest, much of the stalks, leaves, husks, and cobs, known as corn stover, goes to waste.
But now a team of engineers at the University of California, Riverside, have discovered that they can use this stover to filter drinking water.
They were able to transform the corn waste into activated charcoal, which is charred material often used to treat water because it contains millions of microscopic pores that can filter out toxins.
The team produced the charcoal using hot compressed water in a process known as hydrothermal carbonization, and found it was able to absorb 98% of the pollutant they tested.
Upcycling waste is a growing trend. For example, as the food tech magazine The Spoon reports, one company is turning sugarcane bark, pineapple leaves, and hemp stalks into fibers.
Another is upcycling beer waste into nutrition bars, and a third turns feathers from the poultry industry into packaging.
As one UC Riverside researcher said, converting waste into usable materials will create new value and eliminate the environmental harm that comes from today's take, make, and dispose model. And finally, people generally hate wasps. They're depicted as the gangsters of the insect world out to get us. And this hatred is ancient, The Bible calls for hornets to punish sinners, and Aristotle dismissed wasps as nowhere near as divine as bees.
But Sirian Sumner, a professor at University College London and a self-anointed wasp evangelist, is on a mission. She says the insects are misunderstood and provide a wide range of ecosystem benefits.
For example, wasps are predators that can be used for pest control in agriculture because they love to eat aphids, flies, and caterpillars that can damage crops.
Sumner says we don't get angry when stung by a bee because we understand their value as pollinators. But adult wasps also go flower to flower, collecting nectar for energy, and some even make honey.
She calls wasps flying pharmacies because their venom and saliva have antibiotic properties, and yellow jacket venom has shown promise in treating cancer.
Sumner insists that wasp larvae are quite delicious and surprisingly nutritious. They're high in protein, low in fat, and contain essential amino acids. Nom nom.
That's the buzz for this week in Water. We'll see you next time.
Time now for KGNU's comment line, when we hear what's on the minds of listeners.
Hello, this is actually a service request rather than a comment in a sense. I live in South Westminster in Adams County, and in the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks maybe, the reception here for 88.5 has gotten steadily worse, so that, on the one radio that I use in one room, the static has increased immeasurably. And then on my main receiver, which I usually have very good reception for KGNU, I can no longer bring it in at all, even though I have an auxiliary FM antenna and I play around with the wires. I can occasionally get a word from the station, but it's just not working properly. So I wanted to pass that information along to you in case other people are having the same problem, so that maybe you can do something with your transmission to make it possible for me to listen to Democracy Now! In the mornings again. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Karen Hardy.
Yeah, this is Javon, and I've just discovered you guys. I'm out here in Superior, Colorado, delivering for Amazon, and earlier today you played the ultimate mix of John Lennon's song Hold On. And today it's pretty dark and muggy out here just because it's raining. But while that song was playing, the rain stopped and the sun popped out for a brief minute. And then it's like as soon as that song ended, the rain started back up again. So I just thought that was something you guys might like to know. So keep doing what you guys are doing, and thank you for introducing us to some new music.
Well, I have just a general issue in KGNU. For programs that are made in-house, you're using software to remove the space between sentences, but also probably pauses, where there may be long pauses during an interview. But I noticed a lot of shows today, Monday's show, this is May the 3rd, Metro was a great example. That gap was reduced to zero. It's like writing a book with no periods in it, and it's unlistenable. It really eliminates, I think, just the kind of the emotional signals you get out of what's trying to be said. Also feels like I'm running out of breath just hearing it. So I'd just like to ask, could we add 1 second, at least 1 or 2 seconds, for those type gaps? And, always take a listen before putting it in there. I think that would help a lot. My name is Charles Zolchner up in Jamestown.
A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play back the messages on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during the Morning Magazine. And that does it for today's Morning Magazine on KGNU. I've been your host, Shannon Young.